Anarchopreneur, episode number 48, the top 10 habits of the world's most successful people. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
Well, hey there. Welcome to Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. I am your host, Nathan Frazier, and I can't do this anymore. What's up, Free Market Squad? Welcome to the show. This is Anarchopreneur. We're being broadcast on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM. You can also hear the show on the TuneIn app, if you got that on your phone, and also on iHeartRadio. That's pretty freaking spiffy. And of course, you can go to NathanFraserShow.com to pick up archives of this show. Today, I'm just going to get straight to the point. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things, actually. So this week, I'm going to cover a recent, very anti-business, anti-capitalist speech made by the Pope. We're going to be examining an article from PanAmPost.com, not a fake news site, by the way. Also, I'm going to be letting you know about some of the updates that are going to be kind of give you an update on Nathan Frazier Land, some of the things that are going to be coming soon from Podcast Blastoff and from the new and improved Free Market Squad website. And I'm also going to be giving my top 10 success habits to implement in 2017 to make that your year. So a lot to cover. I'm just going to jump right into it. This week's Live Free FM Focus on Freedom, I'm going to be talking about a recent speech that the Pope gave. So I'm going to poison the well a little bit before I jump into this. Now, I'm not completely anti-Catholic. I'm distasteful of organized religion in general. But I don't hate any one particular religion any more than any of the rest. But I will say this, having spent many years going down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole, if there is a massive New World Order conspiracy, and if there is a head of the beast, my money would be on the Jesuits as the top of the pyramid. So maybe I do have a little bit of bias there. But when it comes to this recent Pope, the last one didn't impress me much either, but this recent one is just constantly spouting out this leftist communist garbage. And again, if you happen to be Catholic, no offense to you as an individual. I know a lot of Catholic people that are great people. I could really care less about somebody's religion. But the head of the Catholic Church right now, he's a straight-up communist. And the majority of the things that come out of his mouth make me sick. And if you find that offensive, I really don't care. The fact of the matter is this guy sits on a golden throne and he preaches about feeding the poor from his ivory tower. And he talks about how, I'm going to get into it. But here's the other thing. The Vatican itself is its own city state. And the Vatican owns more land in foreign countries than even the U.S. does. The Vatican has more churches throughout the world than the U.S. has military embassies U.S. embassies or military bases. So I think the only company in the world that comes close to owning as much real estate as the Vatican does is McDonald's. So that tells you how wealthy the Vatican is. And right now, the current Pope loves to get up on his golden throne and preach about wealth inequality. And to me, it just comes off as more than a bit insincere. So I'm going to be talking about a recent article from Pan Am Post, And I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to go read this article yourself. I'm going to read through it. It's a really quick article. I'm going to read through it once, and then I'm going to read through it again, giving my own commentary. So here we go, from PanAmPost.com. Pope Francis said this last week that companies should not exist to earn money, even if it serves to measure their productivity. Rather, they should exist to, quote-unquote, serve. The Supreme Pontiff, speaking at the International Conference of Catholic Business Associations in the Vatican, said that it was urgent to recover the social meaning of financial and banking activity. He asked Catholic entrepreneurs to take the risk of a complicated life by giving up certain economic gains. All human activities, including business, can be an exercise in mercy, which is participation in the love of God for men, the Pope said. Talking about companies immediately puts us in touch with one of the most difficult issues of moral perception, money. I have said several times that money is the devil's dung. In the opinion of the Pope, money should serve instead of rule. He defined money as a technical instrument of intermediation, comparing values and rights, fulfilling obligations and savings. He also said credit should be given to family housing, small and medium enterprises, education, healthcare, and improvement and integration of the poorest urban centers. A crematistic, which is basically the study of money or the study of accumulating wealth, a crematistic logic of the market makes credit more accessible and cheaper for those who have resource or have more resources, and more expensive and difficult for those who have less. To the point of leaving the poorest sections of the population at the hands of unscrupulous usury. I don't know how to pronounce that word. You guys know what I'm talking about. Basically, excessive interest rates, the Pope said. At the international level, the financing of the poorest countries easily becomes a usurer activity, he said. And he spoke in favor of state intervention to protect certain collective goods and to ensure the satisfaction of fundamental human needs. All sounds very, very noble and honorable on the surface. I'm going to go back through this paragraph by paragraph, pick it apart, and explain why this whole argument is just riddled with economic fallacies. So, first paragraph. Pope Francis said last week that companies should, Pope Francis said last week that companies, quote, should not exist to earn money, unquote, even if it serves to measure their productivity. Rather, they should exist, quote, to serve, unquote. Here's the deal. Businesses do exist to serve. They only can succeed if they serve well. The point of starting a business is not to get rich. I mean, a lot of people think that that's the point of starting a business, especially if they've never tried to start a business. But if your business doesn't serve the needs of other people, you will not get rich. The only way a business can succeed is if it exists to serve. So, and then money is a byproduct of that serving. Money is a way that you tell that you're actually serving a need. So right off the bat, first sentence is a economic fallacy. Number two, the Supreme Pontiff, speaking at the International Conference of Catholic Business Associates in the Vatican, said it was, quote, urgent, unquote, to recover the social meaning of financial and banking activity. He asked Catholic entrepreneurs to, quote, take the risk of complicating life, unquote, by giving up certain economic gains. Now, here's the deal. If you're a charitable person, and I'm not saying all rich people are charitable, I'm not saying all business owners are charitable, but I am saying if you are a charitable person, giving up economic gains means that you're going to be less able to be charitable. If you don't have economic gains, you're not going to have any profit. You're not going to have any ability to donate, you're not going to have the ability to be charitable. So by asking entrepreneurs to give up economic gains, if these are giving people, if these are charitable people, by having them give up their economic gains, you're limiting the amount that they can be charitable. Am I making a connection that is not actually there? It seems like to me, if you're a charitable person to begin with, the more economic gains you have, the more charitable it'll be possible for you to be. Anyways, quote, all human activities, including business, can be an exercise in mercy, which is participation in the love of God for men, unquote, the Pope said. Now, I particularly am not a very spiritual person. I'm very skeptical. I'm not going to say I'm an atheist, but I'm definitely agnostic when it comes to this, when it comes to the whole spiritual world. But I did read a book recently called 48 Days to the Work You Love. And I can't remember the name of the author, but whoever the author was of this book was definitely very religious. And one of the points that he makes in the book is that your work should be a prayer. Your work should be a celebration of what you were put here to do. And if your work is draining, if your work is not in alignment with what you were put here to do, you're not doing the correct work. And that by working and doing what you were put here to do, you are actually celebrating. It's like a physical interpretation of a prayer. It's basically saying, I know why, quote unquote, God put me here, and I'm doing what God wanted me to do. And so here's the deal. Most people go into business because they love serving their community in the way that their business serves their community. They do it because they do love serving other people. They do it because they do have a love for their common man. And if you're religious and you're doing work that you love, that serves people that you love, then you are basically participating in the love of God for men. So I don't understand why the Pope makes this assertion that if you're in business, you're not participating in the love of God for men. All right. Quote, talking about companies immediately puts us in touch with one of the most difficult issues of moral perception, money. I have said several times that money is the devil's dung, unquote. I'm not going to go into this one. I've gone into this so many times. I don't want to beat a dead horse. Money is not the devil's dung. Money is not the root of all evil. Some people say, well, no, money is not the root of all evil, but the love of money is the root of all evil. I even disagree with that because I love money. I think I want to have as much money as I possibly can because I'm a very giving person and I give a lot of money away. But as a form of communication, I love money. I love communication. Money's just a placeholder for value. It's a form of communication. It's a way for people to tell each other what they value. It's a way for somebody to say, no, this isn't for me, or yes, what you just did is absolutely for me. So as a placeholder for value, as a form of communication, I love it. Now, just like all communication, it can be used to manipulate. People can talk to you and manipulate you. People can lie to you and manipulate you. It can be used to harm, but for the most part, it improves relationships and it improves society. Now, just because two people are in a relationship and one person can cheat and lie and say that they're in love with this person and be hurting them and go out and get herpes and come back and say, no, I've never slept with anybody else. And then bam, you got to go to the clinic. Just because somebody can use communication to hurt somebody doesn't mean that a relationship is better without communication. Just because communication can be used to hurt doesn't mean that communication as a whole is the devil's dung. And money's the same way. Money is just a form of communication, and just because that form of communication can be used to mislead people, can be used to hurt people, it can also be used to benefit society as a whole, to benefit relationships as a whole, and it's just like any other tool. a butter knife can kill you. That doesn't mean a butter knife is the root of all evil. So calling the money the devil's dung just shows an incredibly ignorant take on what money actually is. In the opinion of the Pope, quote, money should serve instead of rule. Now, I actually agree with this, but I think that money does serve. Yes, it can rule. It can rule over greedy people. But in that instance, greed is the problem and money is not the problem. Money helps bring that problem to light. But without money, those people would still be greedy. Those people would still consume more than what they actually need. Those people would still try and make up for insecurities by hoarding certain things. The problem is the insecurity. The problem is the greed. The problem is not the money. So money does serve, and money, just like any other type of communication, it can rule, just like anything else. Anybody can be ruled by anything. Some people are ruled by their addiction to cigarettes. Some people are ruled by their addiction to lust. Does that mean that sex in particular is a bad thing? No, but if you let it rule over you, then yeah, it does become a bad thing. Sex helps the species continue, but definitely if you have an unhealthy addiction to it, it can rule over you. So the addiction, the insecurity is what's wrong, not the money itself. Okay, continuing. He defined money as a, quote, technical instrument of intermediation, unquote, comparing values and rights, fulfilling obligations, and saving. He also said credit should be given to family housing, small and medium enterprises, education, healthcare, and the improvement and integration of the poorest urban centers. Now, this one right here is very deceptive. A lot of people might say, yeah, I'm on board with that. I totally agree with that. Here's the deal. Unintended consequences. When you subsidize things, when you give free money to things, it always has unintended consequences. A good example of this is like when we give foreign aid to, say, there's starving villages in Africa, and we send we fly a plane over there and dump a bunch of boxes with parachutes attached to them, and the boxes land and they open up and it's a bunch of food to feed the poor people of Africa. What does that do to the farmers that are trying to feed the poor people of Africa, that are the local farmers there? All automatically, it makes their service less valuable, and it makes their what they provide less valuable. It makes it to where they're not able to make a living now farming the goods that they used to farm for the community. So what does that do? Well, it makes it to where people, instead of going and buying from the local farmer, they just run out and grab the crap out of the box that fell from the sky. And so the farmer goes out of business. So the farm shuts down. And now when the boxes stop falling out of the sky, all of a sudden there's no more farmers to produce the food. So the people are now in a worse situation than they were before you fed the hungry people. So by giving by intervening in the marketplace, we actually end up messing things up, even though we have the best of intentions. Also, this in that instance inside of poorer communities, inside of the inner cities, a lot of times giving money creates dependency. And it can create generational welfare. And this isn't just an inner city problem. Look at the farm subsidies. It's the same thing. It creates farms that are dependent on subsidies and aren't able to produce the way that they would be able to produce without the subsidies. So it creates all of these little ripples that turn into these giant tsunami waves of disastrous effects that started because we thought we could throw a pebble in the middle of the pond, and we thought we were doing it for good. But the truth of the matter is, humans just aren't, we can't calculate every single thing. The marketplace is made up of hundreds of millions of billions of people making independent decisions. And when you start sticking your fingers in there, there's always going to be unintended consequences. And then the other thing is, when you're creating these programs that help the poor, being somebody who grew up on these programs, you're creating not only dependency, but they always come with strings attached. So if you want the housing, that means you have to deal with housing inspections. That means that the state gets to choose who you're allowed to be in a relationship with. It means that the state gets to choose how much money you're allowed to earn, how many children you're allowed to have. So you want free health care? The state gets to choose which kind of doctors you can go to, which kind of surgery you can have, which kind of medicine you're being forced to take. So every time they give to the poor, it always comes with strings attached, and they can't give to the poor without first taking from, you know, what one person receives without working for, another person works for without receiving. So you can't give to the poor without first taking from the working class and or the upper class or whoever. Either way, you have to take it from somebody. The government doesn't create anything. It just takes and reallocates. And so on every single level, it creates dependency. The giving always comes with strings attached, and it only can give by first stealing from somebody, making somebody else work for free. So on all levels, it's slavery. It's slavery for the poor. It's slavery for the middle class, and it's slavery for the wealthy. Continuing, a crematastic logic of the market makes credit more accessible and cheaper for those who have more resources, and more expensive and difficult for those who have less, to the point of leaving the poorest sections of the population at the hands of unscrupulous usurers, the Pope said. Now, this again, on the surface, this seems to make sense. Well, it's not fair that the poorest people should have to pay the highest interest rates. That doesn't make any sense. But it does, because first of all, interest is just a measure of time and value preference. I'm going to give you this because right now, having this money immediately is more valuable to you than working for it and having it in the long term. For me, giving you this money and getting a payment of interest in return is more valuable. So if two people are willing to make this bargain, then hey, they both did it because they feel like they're getting more out of it on their end than they would be without the deal being made in the first place. Now, when it comes to unscrupulous profit margins or unscrupulous interest, here's the deal. When you're lending, you have to adjust for risk. If you're lending to people who don't often pay back, say you're a car dealer and you're a used car dealer in a very poor community, and 8 out of every 10 cars that you lend money for never gets paid back, and then you have to pay for a repo man to go out and get the cars. Sometimes when you get the cars back, they haven't been taken care of. The oil hasn't been changed. You have to do all kinds of tune-ups on them to fix them up to resell them. If that's the deal that you're, if that's the way the business that you're dealing with, if that's who your customers are, then you have to charge more on your loans because you're having to pay a lot more. And you're not getting a good return on your investment. So you have to charge more on your loans. Now, if you are selling cars to the super wealthy, and when you lease a car to them or when you make a loan to them, they always pay you back and they take their car in every 30,000 miles or every 3,000 miles to get their oil changed, and they're constantly rotating the tires and they take care of the car. And when you get the car back or when you get the loan paid off on time, if that's what you're dealing with, then you don't have to charge as much because you're not taking on as much risk. If you're loaning to poorer people in poorer communities, you're taking on more risk. In order to keep loaning, you have to charge more. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to continue serving that community. So the idea that it's not fair to charge more to the people that can't afford to pay, it ignores basic economics. Now, at the international level, the financing of poorest countries easily becomes a usurer activity, he said. Again, basic economics. Now, I am gonna qualify this. At the international level, the majority of the loaning and lending that's going on is not the same as regular lending that happens at the local level. A great book about this is called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. When money is lent to nation states, it's usually created out of thin air by central banks, which is not the same thing as borrowing money from somebody who actually has the money that they're borrowing to you, in which case this often leads to economic slavery, which begs the question, why is he attacking regular lenders and not going after the central banks? There's not a single mention of the usurer nature of the central banks. Interesting. So he spoke in favor of state intervention to, quote, protect certain collective goods and to ensure the satisfaction of fundamental human needs. Here's the problem. The state doesn't do a good job of this, and because they have a monopoly on it, on protecting collective goods and ensuring the satisfaction of fundamental human needs, because the state has a monopoly on this, and we're forced to pay for it, and there's no competition allowed, there's no incentive for the state to do a good job. So they don't do a good job, there's no incentive for them to do a good job. Why should we trust them to continue doing the job? Just doesn't make any sense to me. In conclusion, most people have no idea what they're talking about when it comes to how the business world works. The Pope is no exception. Making judgments like an armchair quarterback is not the proper way to handle it. Don't judge a businessman until you've had to walk a mile in their shoes. This is Anarchopreneur. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right. Every week, I like to take a moment to shine the spotlight on one of the members of the Free Market Squad and let you know about what they are doing this week. I'm going to let you know about Shane Radliff. Shane is the host or one of the hosts over at Liberty Under Attack Radio. Liberty Under Attack is it's kind of like a general purpose libertarian themed show, but it's mainly focused on solutions. It's mainly focused on self-improvement, development, and just kind of examining the philosophy of liberty. So if you really enjoy awesome conversations with great guests, including myself, I've been on Shane's podcast as well in the past. Go and check out Liberty Under Attack Radio. Also, they've got something called the Direct Action Series, which is just basically a collection of some of the best interviews that Shane has put together with helpful advice that you can use right now to start working towards living a more free life. And like I said, I was part of that series, and there's a lot of people way more intelligent and way more action oriented than I am. So if you like this podcast, I know you're going to love the Direct Action Series from Liberty Under Attack. So go check that out over at libertyunderattack.com and let Shane know that you heard about his podcast from my podcast. That would be awesome. And if you're somebody who prefers taking action as opposed to just discussing what's going on in the world, definitely check out his direct action series over there at libertyunderattack.com as well. All right. How would you like to have your business or your project given the spotlight right here in the middle of my show? Well, this is something that I try to do for members of the Free Market Squad. Every week we have something called Self-Promotion Saturday, where we get our message about what we can do for each other out in the Free Market Squad. And every week I like to take one of the people that participated and shine a little bit of a spotlight, give a little bit of extra love. This week it was Shane from Liberty Under Attack Radio. Next week it could be you. only if you join the Free Market Squad. For more information on how to do that, you can go to freemarketsquad.com, or you can just look us up on Facebook. Just do a search in the toolbar for Free Market Squad and click to join if you want to connect with like-minded, liberty-loving entrepreneurs, a great community there. Free Market Squad, freemarketsquad.com. All right, let's jump back into the show.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge, $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right, Free Market Squad and the place to be. We are back. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. I am your host with a hero complex, Nathan Frazier. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. We are being broadcast on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM, TuneIn application, and iHeartRadio on the cell phones. And, of course, you can find more over at NathanFrazierShow.com. I almost said LiveFreeFM.com. What the heck? All right. Before we jump into this week's Be Your Own Boss segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about just some things that are going on in my own life. Just so you know what to expect over the month of December. So, let's see. I've got a lot of plans for the next year, and in order to get everything set up for January going forward into 2017, I'm probably going to be taking it easy on the podcast for this month. I'll tell you more about what that entails in a second, but first I'm going to tell you about everything that I'm trying to get lined up for this month, all the dominoes that I'm trying to get in place. First of all, I need to get some more work done on Podcast Blastoff. We're going to start running a webinar very soon that is kind of like a vital part of our marketing funnel. And in order to get that marketing funnel set up, it's going to take a little bit of work, which means I'm going to have to spend some time doing that. Also, I just launched a new course. I'm going to start marketing that new course, and I need to get a book written as an upsell for when people sign up for the course. So basically, right now I'm paying about $1.40 per person that signs up for the course through Facebook ads. I'm also going to be investing in some solo ads to try and market that course as well, which means I'm probably going to be paying about $1, $1.50 per person that signs up there. In order to recoup some of that money, I'm going to be creating a book on monetizing your podcast. It'll probably just be like a little PDF or an e-publish book that you can read on your e-reader. But basically, I'm going to sell that after people sign up for the free course. Immediately afterwards, there's going to be an upsell. And that'll just basically help me recoup the cost of marketing the web course. Right now, I'm paying to get people to sign up to take a course that I'm not making any money on. Yeah, I'm getting them on my email list, but it would be nice to recoup some of that money right away. So I need to get this book done. Also, some things that I'm trying to do for the new Free Market Squad site now, and this is the deal. I've been talking about this new site for over a month now. I've been slowly building it in the background, but building a site takes time, especially I work a part-time job, plus I work I own my own business, plus I work, I take other jobs on the side. So very little time to pursue my own business activities when I'm trying to help other people with their business activities. So the site has been slow coming. The things that I've built into it so far, the blog, the Church of the Invisible Hand, is being moved over to the new Free Market Squad site. So there's going to be a lot of resources in the form of the blog there. Also, I've got a new webinar that I'm going to be promoting through that website. That's going to be basically the six or seven pieces that you need to have in place for a successful business. this new webinar is going to be kind of like a lead magnet. It'll be a free webinar that will get you on my mailing list, and I'll probably have to come up with like an upsell for that one as well. And I'm also going to be officially starting to offer services. Up until now, I've been doing all of my freelance work as just word of mouth. I get some results for somebody. They recommend me to somebody else. That somebody comes and hollers at me. I get some results for them. They pay me more. They recommend me to somebody else. But I haven't really been doing any kind of advertising for my services as far as like online goes. It's been pretty much all either locally or people that have heard about what I can do for people through their associates. So I'm actually going to start marketing myself through the Free Market Squad site. Services that I'm going to be trying to offer there, or that I will be offering there, are going to be marketing, consulting, copywriting services. And this is something that I'm very excited about, is I'm planning on launching at least one more mastermind group. Not like the Free Market Squad Facebook group, but an actual, we meet once a week. We help each other grow our businesses, type of mastermind group. This is going to be a paid mastermind group. For the most part, I'm really only charging to eliminate people that don't take it seriously. Seriously or serious, I'm not sure which word I was supposed to use there. But it's basically just going to be a way to filter out people that are not going to get the value out of it that I want it to be. So that's another thing that I'm going to be offering in the very near future as well. But I want to launch this in January, which means I have less than a month to get all of these ducks in a row. And because of that, I've got a ton of work I need to get done over the next month. So I might miss an episode or two this month. If that happens, I apologize. But all of the extra stuff on the new Free Market Squad site will be worth the sacrifice of missing out on one or two episodes this month. I guarantee it. So also, if I do end up missing an episode, I'll probably play around with the RSS feed so that you will get new episodes in your feed, or at least reissued old episodes. We'll see what happens. But it's going to be worth it. Trust me. All right. So section, man, I'm having trouble with words today. Section number three is all about, I'm just going to be talking about success habits. So here's the deal. I work with people that are actually way more successful than myself. I have attained a pretty decent amount of success in my own life on the things that I've gone after. I've also failed miserably on some other things. That's just, you know, that's the way it is. But I'm a very critical person, self-examining. I look at the habits that lead to success in my own life. I look at the habits that lead to success in the lives of other people. And I wanted to spend the last bit of this show talking about the top 10 and maybe 11 different practices that I have realized in my own life have led me to success, and comparing them to the common practices of the masses out there that keep most people from being successful in their own endeavors. So I'm going to go through point by point. I'm going to compare and contrast the habits of successful people versus the habits of unsuccessful people, and then give a little bit of my own take on why I believe this is so, or just a little bit more explanation. So let's just go ahead and jump into it with the first success habit. Successful people continually learn new things, while unsuccessful people tend to think that they already know it all. One thing that I've learned in life is the more that you learn, the more that you expand your knowledge base, the more you realize that you don't know very much at all. The more you study, the more you look into things, the more you realize you had no clue, and the more you start to understand that you probably still have very little of a clue as to everything that's out there as far as knowledge to be attained. But if you're somebody who doesn't spend very much time learning, it's very easy to believe that you already know the extent of what there is to learn. So the people that seem to feel like they know it all tend to know very little. And the people that tend to know a lot, often their base understanding is that they actually know very little. So that was success habit number one. Success habit number two is that successful people tend to talk about ideas and unsuccessful people talk about other people. So I once read a quote. It was something like, great people talk about ideas, mediocre people talk about events and things, and then the lowest of people talk about other people. It's kind of like what do you spend most of your time conversing about? Is it gossip or is it concepts? If you're somebody who spends all of your time talking about tabloid magazine material or what's going on in other people's lives, you're spending way too much time worrying about other people's business, and you're not having very much time at all left over to worry about your own business. But people that spend their time talking about concepts and ideas and hypotheticals, those people usually open their mind to possibilities. And when your mind is open to possibilities, you're much more likely to pursue those possibilities. Number three, successful people take responsibility for their actions. Unsuccessful people tend to blame others. So when you take ownership over your mistakes, over not even just your mistakes, but if you take ownership over your life in general and stop handing that ownership and that responsibility over to other people, when you take ownership over your own thoughts rather than giving that responsibility to the media and to politicians and to your educators, when you take responsibility, when you take blame for things, when you mess up, life tends to give you more responsibilities. The people around you tend to see you as responsible and tend to give you more responsibilities. So even if you're not your own business owner, even if you're somebody who just works a regular 9-to-5, and I shouldn't say just as if it's like demeaning to work a 9-to-5, but even if you work for somebody else, the more responsibility you take, the more you step up and accept responsibility, the more that person is going to realize that they can give you responsibility, the more life is going to realize that it can give you more responsibility, and the more responsibility you take on, the greater you're rewarded. And when something goes wrong, if the first action that you take is to point the finger at other people, it stops you from being able to assess the situation and figure out what you could have done to change it to make a better outcome, which means in the future, when the same situation pops up, you're not going to have that reflection to look back on and make the correct choice. But also, when you point the finger and blame, it makes people less likely to follow your lead. It makes people less likely to trust you. So in general, just taking responsibility, taking ownership over things, even if you're not the 100% the person responsible for the problem in the first place, just the mere fact that you step up and took on the responsibility versus pointing the finger and blaming other people will attract people giving you more responsibility, will attract people putting their faith into you, and will attract more rewards to you in general. I hate to make it sound like some sort of like universal secret or woo-woo thing, but it's been my experience that people that take responsibility always have more success in life than people who point the finger and blame others. Number four, successful people forgive and move on while unsuccessful people hold grudges and stay stuck. Now, this one is, I don't want to say you should just forget. When somebody does you wrong, you shouldn't just forget and pretend like it never happened. Definitely keep that in the back of your mind and say, okay, I know that I can trust this person to do this to me if this happens. And maybe you just write that person out of your life. Maybe you go forward understanding that in this particular situation, you can't trust this person to do anything except for this. But holding on to a grudge, it's kind of like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Holding on to a grudge gives somebody else the ability to live rent-free in your mind. And all of the attention that you give to that, all of the time that you, again, this is going to be a recurring theme, all of the time that you spend worrying about that other person's wrong or that other person's business is time and energy that you can't spend worrying about your own business. Number five, successful people embrace change and unsuccessful people tend to fear change. And I see this both with business owners. When a new technology comes out and they refuse to adopt it, it always ends up hurting them in the long run. In the workplace, when a new method or a new practice gets handed down and they say, hey, we're going to try to do it this way, the people that quickly say, okay, let's see it. Let's try it out. Let's see how it works. If it doesn't work, at least we know, at least we tried it and we know, and we failed fast and we're able to move forward. If it does work, now we've got a better process. But the people that resist it, the people that say, I'm not going to change, I'm stuck in my old habits, whether it's at the workplace, whether it's in life in general, or whether it's as a business owner, when a new technology comes along, the people that resist it, the people that say we're stuck doing it this way and we're not going to do it the new way, tend to go the way of the dinosaurs. So especially when it comes to new technology, people that embrace change tend to succeed. People that fear or reject change tend to be unsuccessful. Number six, successful people want others to succeed. Unsuccessful people want others to fail. Now, this is something that I have personally experienced inside of my mastermind. All of the guys in my mastermind are people that want to lift each other up. All of the guys in my mastermind are people that want to see, we all want to see each other succeed. And give our insights. We're able to give our experiences and pull people up to where we're at. So if somebody's dealing with a problem and they're not able to see the whole picture because they're stuck inside the frame, but we've been through it and we know what steps it took to get the other person to success. If you're a successful person, you're not going to worry about, if I teach him how to get where I'm at, he might take my place. If you spend all of your time in competition mode with other people, worrying that newcomers are going to come and steal your glory and steal your thunder, if you're constantly worried that other people competing with you or other people also being successful is a threat to your own success, you will not achieve success. You will not hold on to success for very long. But if you embrace the success of others, if you encourage the success of others, if you pull other people up to your level, again, this might sound woo-woo, it might sound mystical, but I can't explain it any other way than to say that the universe rewards that type of behavior. The universe says, hey, this is somebody who does well with success. This is somebody we're going to send more success to. And maybe it's just human nature. Maybe human beings, when they see somebody that helps out and goes out of their way to pull other people up, those people want to see that person succeed as well. So they help make that person successful. I'm not sure what the mechanics of it are, but I do know that unsuccessful people tend to get jealous. They tend to sabotage. They tend to try and ruin the success of others. They tend to look down on the success of others, and they tend to stay unsuccessful. This is why in my own business, both in marketing consulting, copywriting, but also in the people that I choose to work with when it comes to graphic design and podcasting, if people are constantly condemning successful people, if people have an anti success attitude, if they look at the people that are successful and they say, oh, that person must have wronged people in order to get their success, or oh, that person's a rich businessman, they must be a greedy capitalist, and they just they have this like anti-success mindset where they hate successful people. They don't like seeing other people be successful. If I start getting that kind of a vibe from somebody that I'm working for, or I'm working with, immediately I cut ties with them and I say, look, I'm not doing business with you anymore, because that type of mindset is a complete sink when it comes to success. You will not have success if you don't celebrate the success of other people. Successful people want others to succeed. Unsuccessful people want others to fail. Number seven, successful people tend to spend more time reading, while unsuccessful people tend to spend more time watching TV. Now, I think that this is because even if it's reading fiction, I think that there's two different mindsets that happen. When you're watching TV, I think you tend to get hypnotized, and it's a very passive form of spending your time or wasting your time. When you're reading, though, even if you're not reading to learn, even if you're just reading fiction, your brain is active. Your brain is creating. Even if somebody's holding your hand and leading you down the story, your brain is still doing a lot more work to visualize what's going on, to create the sounds, to create the scenarios. So reading is a very much more active form of entertainment, while watching TV is very passive. I would say if you want to step it up, though, read educational material. Read stuff that will help you learn. Read stuff that will help you reach and attain your goals. Reading books on marketing and advertising and business management and self-improvement. Reading stuff like that forces you to think, forces you to have connections in your brain that weren't possible before, or didn't happen before. It causes you to see new possibilities, and you're not going to get that from watching TV. So number seven, successful people tend to spend more time reading, while unsuccessful people tend to spend more time watching TV. Number eight, successful people compliment others. Unsuccessful people criticize others. Kind of leads back to the one about successful people like to see others succeed. This is a huge part of why I don't get involved in all the Liberty drama. So-and-so was cheating on his girlfriend, or so-and-so sent nude pictures of other Liberty celebrity, or so-and-so said this and that's inconsistent, or, you know, my Liberty guru is a better thought leader and a better anarchist than your Liberty guru is. I don't really ever get involved in any of that. On the few occasions that I've addressed it, it's been more to talk about our actions as a result of this stuff going on rather than to condemn. And I guess I have been guilty of it once or twice in the past, but I really try to avoid it. I try to be about building people up. If you listen to this show, you know that 90% of what I do in this show is about trying to build you as a listener up. It's about trying to build my audience up. If you've ever worked with me on trying to build your podcast, or if you've ever worked with me on consulting for how to get your business more business, you know that everything that I do, I dedicate myself to helping build you up, to helping build your podcast, to helping build your business. I might criticize, I constructively try to criticize and make you see the things that I think might be hindering you. But I don't spend time trying to tear you down, or I really try to avoid it. I guess we're all human. We all make mistakes sometimes. I can actually think back in the last week of at least one instance where I actually did tear somebody down, and now I'm kind of feeling like a hypocrite. But for the most part, I really do my best to try to build people up, and it seems to be a common trait that successful people spend the majority of their time complimenting people, and unsuccessful people spend a majority of their time criticizing people. Build people up if you want to be successful. Tear people down if you want to be unsuccessful. Number nine, successful people set goals and plans of action, while unsuccessful people live their life as passive victims. So this is something, especially coming into the new year, that is weighing heavy on me right now, is trying to figure out what my goals for 2017 are. A lot of people don't set goals, even if it's just once a year. I suggest doing it every single week. I actually try to set goals for myself, but even if it's just once a year, if you're not aiming for anything, there's an old saying, if you aim for nothing, you're going to hit it every time. But if you aim for the stars, you'll at least hit the moon. Don't just passively go through life, letting life lead you. Grab life by the horns. I almost said another cuss word, and lead life. Be the captain of your own vessel. And lastly, number 10, successful people look for lessons in failure, while unsuccessful people use failure as an excuse to not try again. This one's kind of self-explanatory. We all hit speed bumps in our journeys. When we hit that speed bump, when we have a flat tire, we can either learn from those tragedies, if that's what you choose to make it into. And you can avoid trying to, you know, you can go forward and avoid making the same mistake, or you can just pull over, stop your car, stop driving, and not continue on your journey. Your choices determine whether or not you reach your destination. When you hit a speed bump, when you get a flat tire, the way you handle that determines whether or not you actually reach the destination that you're driving towards. So number 10, successful people look for lessons in failure. Unsuccessful people use failure as an excuse to give up, to not keep going. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate and review the show. I would appreciate that. Also, if you know somebody who would benefit from this episode, please send it to them. Send them an email or a Facebook message and let them know, hey, you got to check out this episode. I know that you'll get a lot out of it. And I would appreciate that. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Remember to be your own boss. You can find more at NathanFraserShow.com. I am out of here. Until next time, deuces.
Free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life, and membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.